Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Gordon Douglas's 1970 film, They Call Me Mr. Tibbs! Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Hey, Ben. I had some quirky thing I was going to bring up.
About the title of the movie?
When you introduced me. No, I just...
Just in general.
I was just letting you know there was something good that I was going to use just right here, right now, but I forgot.
All right. I think you can only do that one time. You know what I mean? Like, you can only use the I forgot my quirky thing intro bit.
No, I legitimately I had something last night while watching the movie, and now I've forgotten it.
Okay. All right.
Which is a shame, because I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, it was offensive and uncalled for, but it was pretty funny.
So, typical Tyler. Yep, good stuff. All right. Well, if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consumed section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. It's also at geektyrant.com if you want to check it out there. So,
hey,
Tyler, I've got the character name game for this week, and this is, of course, the game in which I'll give you a character name, and then at the very end of the episode, you have to guess what movie that character is from. So, the character name is...
Sure.
Elliot...
It's only been...
What?
It's only been 77 episodes.
Yeah, I'm not telling you...
Oh, okay.
You. I'm just saying it so new listeners will know what's going on.
I wish we could just, like, play these games without, like, after, like, the fifth time, just be like, all right, if you don't know the rules by now... whatever, and just like play right through it.
Well, you know, it's like a 10 second thing, you know.
Just kidding.
Consideration.
I'm being facetious, man.
All right, so the character name is Elliot Wilhelm. So we'll come back to that at the very end. So let's go ahead and jump into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, concerts, comic books we've been reading, or anything crazy of that sort. Tyler, what have you been consuming this week?
I don't read comic books anymore, dude.
Okay, I'm just, you know, throwing it out there.
Comic books have fallen to the wayside. I can create my own now.
Oh, speaking of comic books, before we get into this, let me ask you your thoughts. What do you think about the Watchmen prequel comics announcement? Did you hear about that?
I thought they were making a movie prequel. They're actually making comics too.
Yeah, it's comic based. Yeah.
And then they'll make a movie about it.
Well, I don't. No movie discussion.
Like that sequel to 300. Where like, oh, he needs to write the new sequel to 300, and then we'll make a movie about it.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not quite as linked as that 300 thing is.
Did that ever? Was that the Immortals? Was that the sequel?
No, it's supposedly called 300: The Battle of Artemisia, and they're in the process of casting for the movie right now. So I guess Frank Miller must be like close to done with the comic at this point. So
that is insane.
Yeah, but no, the DC announced that they're doing a series of like I think it's coming out this summer of 2012, a bunch of kind of spin-off, one-off things that are going to be considered in the Watchmen canon, if you will. And they're bringing on all these big, you know, A-list comic book movie people, J. Michael Straczynski and, you know, a ton of other, like, recognizable names.
Probably Jeff Johns.
Possibly, I'm not sure, but I just like not even knowing the details of it, what do you think? Are you okay with them adding to that? Because a lot of people consider Watchmen to be, you know, one of the best comics of all time, and they think that, you know, you should kind of leave well enough alone and not mess with it. What do you think?
Well, I mean, Alan Moore was kind of the him and Dave Gibbons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Were the guys behind the original Watchmen, and a lot of stuff that pisses Moore off. And I mean, you know, some people say he's just being a jerk. Other people say, you know, it's like kind of trying to preserve his own creativity by quitting DC and not recognizing that they're making movies and making money off of it, all the merchandise and stuff like that.
Mm.
But then on the same coin, it's like, well, you agreed to sell them this material and they can do whatever they want with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously they're probably going along with this without Moore's consent.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm probably going to side more with the artist than the corporation because
Dave Gibbons, the artist of the original, gave them his blessing, I think. So now you're kind of spoiled.
Yeah, but he's trying to make a quick buck, I think. I haven't heard from Dave Gibbons since, I don't know, the last time he said you could use Watchmen material.
Okay.
But I know Alan Moore, you know, is turning in his weirdly religious grave, even though he's not dead. He probably sleeps in there. Because people are abusing. Cause, and like you said, it was this one-off, one-shot story.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of weird to kind of just keep revisiting the same, like, kicking the same dead horse over and over again. Like, we know what happens. Like, why do we need all this stuff to when we already have this story?
Okay.
I'm probably not going to read it, but...
Well, yeah, because I know you were a big fan of the original comic.
Yeah.
And I am too. I mean, I like it a lot, but I was just wondering if you were interested enough in the concept of a prequel to it to actually seek it out and see what it's all about.
Like, the original is so dense with material that should be enough. Mm-hmm. Like, just if you go and get the Watchmen graphic novel, it has just tales and tales and tales piled onto itself. And like,
and there's all that like supplemental material in there too, like the Tales of the Black Freighter and all the like the kind of excerpts from that novel and stuff, you know.
Right. Yeah, it leaves a lot to the imagination, which I think is always great when you come up with a good story. If it kind of leads its readers to, you know, the kind of the hidden chambers of other stories,
mm-hmm.
and DC just coming out and kind of benefiting from that is, you know, I guess good for some people. And creatively, though, it's kind of like, well, why don't you just write a new, more popular story or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because it seems like even with their standard line of comic titles, it's like, how many times can you reboot and tell the same story over and over again?
Yeah.
It's really not that creative, even though they have like every couple of years, they're like, we have a new creative team, and they're far from creative.
Yeah.
So it just kind of makes me chuckle.
I feel like comics are not meant for people to read them over the span of like 30 years continuously, because all of the reboots and stuff, I feel like they're just aiming at bringing a new audience into it like every few years, and then just hoping that audience eventually like buys a bunch of stuff,
dies
and eventually
off.
eventually abandons it, and then they can just pull in a new crop of people. So,
well, the people that were reading Superman in the 40s are dead by now, so we better reboot where Superman comes from.
Yeah, basically.
Well, yeah, like that's kind of what I got into comics in the first time was because there was such a vast history, and I just had to know like every little thing that happened to these different characters throughout the 50, 60 years that they've been around.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, oh, you don't have to know. You can start here. And I was like, well, I don't want to read your shitty title now. I want to read the ones that were good 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, whatever. I mean, the recent, like, I had kind of, you posted that video about a guy that told the story of the death and return of Superman. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of the names. You may want to just say it right now.
Yeah, Max Landis is the screenwriter of Chronicle, which is in theaters right now. And he and his friends got together, and he did this kind of, if you guys have seen those drunk history videos on Funny or Die, with like Don Cheadle and Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly and stuff, he did kind of a similar thing where he was just sitting there drinking with a video camera pointing at him, and he just like recounted the history of the death of Superman in the comic books back in the 90s. And then he had all of his friends like Mandy Moore and Elijah Wood and Ron Howard and all these people get involved and just kind of act out, you know, his narrations, basically. That's what Tyler's referring to.
And that era of comics, he talks about how shitty it was. And I was just, I thought it was funny, and I thought it was a good idea or a great idea to do it like that,
mm-hmm.
because it is kind of intense and confusing, but in reality, I completely disagree with him because I was like, this exact, like, this ridiculousness and these, like, just random characters popping in and just kind of, just kind of the obscene trivialness of Superman just going around and fighting Doomsday for no apparent reason just made my day. And, like, I read that and I tried to read every single thing that happened for like the next 2 years after that because I thought it was so badass. And that's kind of, he talks about how it was like the shittiest time in comics, and I think Venkman came on and said he never read a Superman comic after that one where he died, and I was like, really? Because that was the one I read and then started reading.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I guess people have different tastes.
Yeah.
Mine is more for the colorful and unexpected, I guess.
All right, well, yeah, now that that tangent is over, go ahead and talk about what you've been consuming this week.
Talking about things that don't make sense, I play Kingdom Hearts 2. Like, I didn't play through the whole game, because it's a really long game, but I continued to play on my, where I saved last, I guess.
Okay, sure.
And there's a lot of stuff you can go back and do.
This is on the PC that you're playing it?
This is on the PS2.
Okay.
PC. You mean a computer, Ben?
Right, yeah. Personal computer, I'm pretty sure.
I think all computers are personal now. We don't have to call them PCs.
Okay, all right.
Let me get a drink of my vodka. Yeah. Yeah, and so I went on this rant on my on Traherne's blog, The Sentinel. Talked about how Kingdom Hearts 3, like, they haven't made one yet. Like, there was Kingdom Hearts 1, which started the series, and there was a great commercial for it back in like the early 2000s. I was still in high school, and I'm like, wow, that looks badass. So I like saved up and bought it, or I think I borrowed it from somebody, I can't remember, and I played it and I beat it, and I was like, okay, cool, that game was pretty awesome. I hope
just,
they come out
just give like a one sentence summary of what the game's about for people who have not.
You play as this sword wielding individual who goes through the different Disney worlds. But it's dramatic too. It's not like hokey or campy. It's kind of campy in some parts, but it's mostly like you have to save the destruction of all like Winnie the Pooh land and like Beauty and the Beast land. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but it's also, you know, kind of cool, like the fighting and the engine and stuff like that. So I played through that one, and then I was like, okay, Kingdom Hearts 2 came out like 3 years later, but I didn't have enough money to buy it then. So like 4 years after that. I bought the second one. I was like, all right, sweet. I finally get to see what happens after the first game. And it's like, and I said this, I was like, the story is kind of out there. Like, you have no idea what's going on because there were these games in between the big games that you could buy for, like, the Game Boy Advance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't have, like, every single system that existed. And so between these big games, they'll have all these little games that are on, like, the Game Boy and the PlayStation Portable and like a cell phone. And I was just like, I'm serious. There was one for a cell phone. And like, they reference in the big games these events that happened in the little games. And I'm just kind of like, well, all right, I understand that. But do you have to make the story so dependent on these other systems? And it just doesn't make sense to me. So I'm asking, you know, I was kind of like, well, where's Kingdom Hearts 3? Because, you know, they've been talking about it for, like, the last 4 years or whatever, whenever the last game came out.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still making all these mini-games that are on these other systems.
Mm.
Like, oh, we're getting one for the 3DS now. And I'm like, I don't have a 3DS.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to buy one just to play a game so that I know what's going on. So I just read the synopses on the internet.
Okay.
So that's there's really no discussion to be had there. I'm angry about it.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a douche move. Like, basing an entire story on the assumption that everyone who plays it also owns multiple systems and your other versions of games. That's like, it's not really fair.
But it's kind of gay now, too, because now I'll have to buy a PS3 if Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out on PS3.
Well,
I don't know. I go into it.
Yeah. Okay.
It should come out on the game. It should come out on the system it originally premiered on.
I agree with you up until that point.
Just saying. Yeah, that's pretty funny. And also, my last thing is I went and saw Phantom Menace 3D.
Oh, no.
I got the collectible Darth Maul 3D glasses, and I got to keep those. I didn't toss them out like a fool. I'm going to bring those to every one of my 3D events now. And yeah, they I thought for sure they weren't going to change anything, but they did. Guess what they changed, Ben?
Yoda.
Yeah, exactly. They did. Oh, did you read my review already?
I did, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I reposted it. And I think it's kind of funny because at one point I was like, I hardly put any work into improving this review and re-releasing it, just like they hardly put any. Because like the 3D, I was like, okay, I guess it's kind of 3D. But as we know, like movies look better in 3D if they're made in 3D.
Right, right? Yeah, yeah.
And if you just take a regular movie and kind of make it 3D, it's, you know, whatever. But yeah, they took puppet Yoda out and put in CG Yoda from the next two movies. So like when it originally came out in 99, when I went and saw it, there was puppet Yoda and he didn't look like old puppet Yoda. It was like new puppet Yoda. And I was like, okay, whatever. He's Yoda still. And then in the next in Attack of the Clones, they made him CG Yoda. And I was like, okay, what happened to puppet? Where's the continuity here?
Yeah.
Like, okay, there's puppet Yoda. And then there's CGI Yoda, who look completely different now.
Mm-hmm.
And now Lucas is saying, oh, okay, this is the one that I really wanted to make. Here's CGI Yoda. And you're like, oh, okay. So it's just kind of funny how he sneaks those things in.
Yeah.
It's kind of obvious, but...
he's always tinkering with it, man.
I know. I like to do that, too. I tend to do that on my own things, but I also don't make billion-dollar movies.
Right.
I make like little things that aren't ready for consumption yet. That's why I go back and once I put it out on screen, I'd probably be like, whatever, I'm done with that.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know the occurrence of the next films? Like, is it going to be every year for the next 6 years or is it going to be like episode two, like in 3 months or something?
No, it's supposed to be one a year.
Oh my gosh.
In theory, if I think what they're trying to do is, and this was really, I think, kind of stupid.
Not make new movies.
No, well, yes. But I think what they're trying to do is base whether or not they're going to release the future films on the success of how these early ones do.
What?
Which I think a lot of people would be really interested in seeing the original trilogy in 3D and skipping episodes 1, 2, and 3. But they decided to put episodes 1, 2, and 3 out there first. So it's like, even if they do, like, if they do poorly, that's not necessarily representative of the fact that people don't want to see the original trilogy in 3D. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they did that already back in the 90s when they re-released
the
old trilogy. And then they came out with the new movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then not even 7 years later, they're starting to re-release them again. And it's like, okay, well, why don't you just spend all this time converting everything into 3D into actually sitting down and writing and producing and making new movies? I just don't get it. But I think he's come out and said he's not going to be making any new Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
Because people just shit on everything that he does. But it's like, well, dude, you really give us a lot to work with. Because yeah. All you do is shit on our dreams and loved, beloved characters.
Yeah.
Sight, you know, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, Sight.
Yeah.
I mean, the Phantom Menace, there is a sweet fight scene at the end of it. But you have to muck through a lot of stuff to get to that. And it's just like,
yeah.
So you read the review already?
I did. Yeah, it was interesting because you wrote the original review for it like what, 5 years ago or something?
Yeah, 2007.
And then this is you can find this at notjustnewmovies.com, by the way. And then in your re-release of your review, you kind of left your original work intact, but you also just commented on yourself basically, like
right.
You just added parentheticals and like kind of like, this is kind of true, or like, no, yeah, this is definitely right or something. So I enjoyed it. From the fact of like the artist commenting on his own artwork, right. So to speak. So
yeah, there's nothing more fun than blogging than going back and blogging about your blog. That's one of my favorite things to do.
Yep.
I did that with a lot of my archives. I just went back through every article and just tried to make as many comments as I could.
Yeah, I liked how my favorite part of it was Yeah, at one point in your original review, you said something about how, like, you can see parallels between some sort of, like, ancient Roman emperor or something.
Yeah.
With, like, what
the
they've
fall
got
of the
going
Roman
on.
Empire, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're now yourself, your current 2012 self in the comments of that, like, added this parenthetical, and you're just like, nice! Exclamation point. Like you were impressed with yourself that you had picked that out in the first time.
I was, because I don't remember, like, I dropped that reference for no reason whatsoever, just to show off, I think.
Yeah. So, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, man.
Cool.
No, that's it. That's all I have. That's all I've consumed.
Okay. All right.
Myself in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah. I've got a few things. So on, I think this was Monday night, this past Monday, I went back to LACMA, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, and to another event hosted by Film Independent, who hosted the Gary Oldman conversation that I talked about last week. And they did a conversation with Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, and the real-life Billy Bean, who is the manager of the general manager of the Oakland Athletics, and the character that Brad Pitt plays in Moneyball.
The Oakland A's, Ben. They're called the A's.
Okay, excuse me. The A's Athletics.
If you want to be, if you want to be right, it's Athletics. But
yeah,
I'm just letting you know. Just letting you know, dude, so you don't go walk around and be like, hey, let's go watch them athletics, and no one knows what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
You gotta call them the A's.
So Pitt and Jonah Hill are both nominated for Oscars right now, so that's kind of cool just to hear them talk about their and Moneyball itself is up for Best Picture, so there's a lot of prestige surrounding this whole thing. But they really didn't take it too seriously. There's a lot of joking around. And, you know, for the Gary Oldman thing, it was kind of cool to hear him talk, because the discussion kind of spanned his whole career. And they were able to jump around a lot based on kind of like how he got into acting. And a lot of the conversation was a lot more wide ranging, I guess. And in here, in this most recent conversation with Pitt and Hill, they talked almost exclusively just about Moneyball. I mean, that's why they were there. They showed a screening of the movie afterwards. I've already seen it, so I didn't stick around for that. But so it was a little bit more limited in scope with what they were able to talk about. But Jonah Hill was really funny, as to be expected, I think, from anybody who knows his film work. And, you know, they were joking around a lot. And Billy Bean and Brad Pitt seemed to have a pretty cool relationship where, you know, it's kind of like the whole Mark Zuckerberg thing where Jesse Eisenberg plays Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network, and you have to worry about, like, playing a real-life person in a movie where that person is still living and, you know, like, doing the same job that they're doing when you depict them in that movie. Like, you kind of have to take these things into account when you're portraying them as an actor, I would think. And Jonah Hill was talking a little bit about that, and he's like, playing somebody real would be really terrifying because the amount, this is a quote from him, the amount I feel I would owe them in my performance, and that might affect your performance in certain ways because you might make certain choices going, oh, well, that's a bold choice, but I don't want to upset this person who has a real life. I'd be terrified if somebody was hired to portray me in a movie. So, you know, they got into a little bit more deep discussions than just like, oh, this movie was awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to make. Oh, blah, blah, blah. The kind of typical stuff. So, yeah, you know, it was kind of cool. And it was just cool to see Brad Pitt in person. I mean, he's like one of the most famous people on the planet right now and has been for the past few years.
Is that again?
Brad Pitt? Yeah, I don't know. This little actor. He's
Brad Pitt?
Some indie stuff, yeah. But
okay. All right. Yeah, maybe I've seen him in like one of the film festivals.
Yeah. That's,
he just hasn't blown up yet, I guess.
Yeah. So that was Monday. That was pretty cool. And then movies that I'd seen. Man, Tyler, you will love this, and you really need to check this out. There's this movie. It's called a filmumentary, and the title is Raiding the Lost Ark. If you guys have never heard of this, you can go to filmumentaries.com and check it out there. It's directed by this guy named Jamie Benning, and Raiding the Lost Ark is a feature-length documentary about Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first Indiana Jones movie, in which Jamie Benning brings together all of these behind-the-scenes featurettes and brings in sound bites of interviews with Spielberg and George Lucas and Harrison Ford and Karen Allen and everybody involved with the movie, all the actors and things like that, and kind of splices all this stuff in with footage from the actual movie. So it plays out not quite in real time. It's actually a little bit longer than Raiders of the Lost Ark because he adds in storyboards of deleted scenes and, you know, interview footage and stuff with John Rhys Davies and all these people, like, talking about the real...
John Rhys Davies.
The real...
I shit my pants on set.
He tells that story in this thing. That was in a deleted scene of the movie. He said that there's this sequence where one of the Nazi guys at one point, like, takes him out into this field to be shot, to be executed. And Spielberg, like, yells out to him, "Hey, will you, like, bend down a little bit to get better, like, more of an eye level, like, on an even keel with this guy?" And
I don't think that's a good idea, Steven.
And then he does it and just, like, craps himself in front of 200 people because everybody was getting sick because they were filming in Tunisia and everybody was getting, like, forms of dysentery and all this really terrible stuff because they all ate the food there. It was, like, contaminated.
Well, that's what he says in reality. He was just the only guy to shit himself. Oh, yeah, everybody was doing it.
Well,
We all had this. What is it, McDonald's?
They talked about that because, you know, the famous scene where the guy pulls out the sword and kind of, like, showboats with the sword and Indy just pulls out the gun and shoots him. The concept for that scene was born out of the fact that everybody was really sick and Harrison Ford had eaten the local food, and he went up to Spielberg and was like, "Listen, dude, you've got, like, maybe 2 hours with me before I'm going to go back to my hotel room and just, like, start throwing up everywhere." So that scene was supposed to be this really long 3-page fight sequence between Indy and this swordsman. And he's like, "Why don't I just shoot him and then call it a day?" And they're like, "All right, that's fine. Go for it." So they talk about – and I think I talked about this on an earlier episode of this podcast. Got a chance to see Raiders of the Lost Ark in theaters last year, and they hosted there was a Q&A with Spielberg and Harrison Ford, and some of that audio actually ends up in Raiding the Lost Ark, this documentary. So it's available for free to watch. It's on Vimeo. You can find it at filmumentaries.com. Jamie Benning has actually done a couple other ones. He did some for Star Wars. So there's one called Star Wars Begins, and he did the same thing, kind of compiled a lot of these, you know, interviews and clips and stuff in there too. So it's really, really cool. It's kind of like right now the definitive documentary about Raiders of the Lost Ark, because that movie hasn't come out on Blu-ray yet. It's supposed to come out, I think, maybe like 2013 or something. Spielberg's working on the Blu-ray of E.T. right now, and then he said that he's going to be doing Raiders after that. So sometime in the next couple years, it'll come out on Blu-ray. But the coolest part is that Spielberg has never done a commentary, like a full commentary for Raiders. You won't find that on any of the DVDs that you might own or anything like that. But because Benning has just gone through this exhaustive list of interviews where Spielberg talks about Raiders, he's actually been able to find clips of him talking about each particular section of the movie as it's happening when he plays it out in Raiding the Lost Ark. So it's really, really cool, and I can't recommend it enough, especially if you're a big fan of Indiana Jones. This is, like, the thing to watch. So I really want to plug that and encourage people to go check it out. And then last night...
Can't you do that on Blu-rays nowadays? Like, won't it hit, like, a mark where they're like, "Now you can watch this documentary and then resume the movie from here," or something like that?
Maybe.
I know The Dark Knight had that.
Yeah.
We were watching The Dark Knight, and it was like the zipline scene. Is there a zipline scene in that movie?
Yeah, it opens with...
And they're like, "Watch this documentary," and we were only like 2 minutes in, and we're like, "Let's watch it." And then, like, we tried to watch all the documents that came with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
My second question is, mm-hmm, Spielberg's E.T., is he going to Lucas that stuff and include the CGI E.T. version that came out a couple years ago, or is he going to go straight up puppet?
He's not. He's saying...
okay, good. Spielberg, integrity intact.
Because right at the time when Spielberg, when Lucas added the no to Darth Vader in the
where's Padme? You killed her, Lord Vader. No.
Right when he added that, this was the time when Spielberg did the Raiders of the Lost Ark Q&A last year. So during that thing, he announced that he's doing the E.T. Blu-ray, and he also polled the crowd, hey, should I do the original version? And everybody went crazy. And he's like, okay, so the Blu-ray version of E.T. will be what you saw in theaters, basically. It's going to be that same exact print. So
I had to go and actually buy specific Star Wars DVDs to get the theatrical cut. As opposed to the the souped up versions.
Right. I think he probably makes it pretty difficult for people to find the original cut.
No, it only came out I remember the day it came out. Like, you could get the souped up version and the theatrical version in the same box.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out and bought all three right away.
Threw away the souped up version.
Well, no, I kept the souped up version, so I have something to complain about. But Return of the Jedi, when they have Hayden Christensen as the ghost instead of the old man.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my god.
Yeah. So the last thing I watched was yesterday I watched Old School on TV, and I haven't seen this movie in its entirety in a long time. And this is the 2003 comedy directed by Todd Phillips, who at that point was kind of like, he had only done Road Trip as a narrative feature at that point. And this movie really put him on the map.
Former gangbang?
Yeah, former NJNM podcast host Pat and I were talking about this, and he was saying that this movie really made Todd Phillips' career, and it's because of the great cast. I mean, you've got Luke Wilson, Vince Vaughn, Will Ferrell, and Jeremy Piven, and a bunch of other people in there. There's a bunch of tiny roles for people like Rob Corddry and the dude who plays Howard Wolowitz on The Big Bang Theory. A couple people.
Ellen Pompeo's in that too. Great, yeah. From Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is.
Body.
So, and Alicia Cuthbert from Happy Endings is in there. So yeah, there's a lot of. A lot of familiar faces now that weren't super popular at the time. This movie holds up really well. The comedy in it is really hilarious. A lot of these, especially the Will Ferrell comedies, some of them tend to grate on me a little bit. I've mentioned before that Semi-Pro is one of the few movies that I've turned on and then just had to walk out of 20 minutes in. I had to turn it off. I couldn't do it. But this one I feel has a ton of rewatchability, if that's a word. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on Old School, Tyler?
Yeah, I like Old School too. It's not. I've watched it plenty of times, but Anchorman's up there as my favorite.
Yeah.
That one and Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, Starsky and Hutch is one that, critically and kind of, I guess, in the pop culture eye, is one of the lesser ones, but I know that you and I like that movie a lot.
That's how I judge all my movies like that. Is it going to be as good as Starsky and Hutch? I'm still waiting for a sequel because, that shit was the bomb.
Yeah, I guess Snoop Dogg's probably not doing much these days, so get him in
Snoop
there.
Snoop Dogg, Owen, Ben, then none of them are doing anything. Let's get out of here.
I forgot about your own Wilson impression.
Let's make a Starsky and Hutch too. Come on, Ben. Come on, Snoop Dogg. Get with it.
Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn are actually going to be re-teaming for a movie called Interns. I just heard about this past week, and they Vince Vaughn wrote the movie, and it's it's going to be the first time that they kind of co-headline a movie since Wedding Crashers, which I love.
That sounds awesome.
And it's about them getting fired and having to start again on the job hunt from the ground level, as interns in this company battling against young kids or something for jobs.
Does it take place in the 70s?
I'm pretty sure it's a modern day thing.
Snoop Dogg is a pimp?
No, you're thinking of Starsky and Hutch too.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to see it then.
All right.
I'm just kidding.
You're not going to see anything until you see Starsky and Hutch too. You should write them a letter and see if you threatening to never see a movie until Starsky and Hutch 2 actually gets them to do anything.
I'm going to give them a phone call as Owen Wilson demanding Starsky and Hutch 2.
Hey,
you
Owen,
guys are sitting on a gold mine here.
It really is just a Kermit the Frog voice.
Oh, dude. I have a Kermit the Frog voice, too. It's just not as good.
Okay. Maybe we can hear that later.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on into our review of They Call Me Mr. Tibbs.
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
In the heat of the night, Virgil Tibbs got the killer. In his new movie, he's not sure he wants to. Sidney Poitier, Martin Landau, in...
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
I think she's been strangled, too. It'll take the autopsy.
All right, show me the neck.
Couldn't be shorter if he bit him.
Maybe you ought to pass this one.
You killed the wrong man.
All right, so They Call Me Mr. Tibbs was directed by Gordon Douglas in 1970. And stars Sidney Poitier and Martin Landau. Tyler, what did you think about this film?
Well, I was kind of put back because I thought Martin Landau was the guy from Little House on the Prairie,
mm-hmm.
from the 70s.
Michael Landon.
But in actuality, oh yeah, you act like you know now. Yeah, it was this guy named Michael Landon.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of that, yeah, Mr. Tibbs or Detective Tibbs or whoever he is, played by Sidney Poitier. Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's a really good movie, but it's actually pretty entertaining if you like funk-driven copsploitation movies. Is that a genre?
I think you just coined it.
Because we've heard of blaxploitation and like martial arts exploitation, but there were a lot of movies like this that weren't technically blaxploitation, although you know, it a lot of times took place in the inner city. You know, like Dirty Harry. Movies along those lines, although this, I think, preceded Dirty Harry. Was the first Dirty Harry in the 60s or the 70s?
I think it was in the 70s, yeah. Let me look that up, but go ahead.
But this felt a lot like a Dirty Harry film. So I'm going to call it a copsploitation movie.
Yeah, Dirty Harry was 1 year after this, so 71.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, just kind of the stuff that they talked about was very, you know, cop work driven. I mean, there was some drama stuff at home, but... Like, when they were going through the apartment scene, and they're like, we found some semen over here. And, like, the other guy's just like, yeah, we found some semen in the bed, too.
Yep.
And it's just like the whole place is covered in semen. And just the idea that in the 70s, at one point in a movie, somebody goes, there's semen right here, just kind of made me laugh.
Yeah, I actually have that in my notes. Semen everywhere.
It's like, who knows who was here when she died?
Yeah.
There's so much fluid. Yeah, that's kind of something we see in, like, those cop procedural dramas, where it's like, oh, let's look at, you know, blood splatter and, like, CSI stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, that really wasn't a thing back 40 years ago,
because
they just, I mean, they didn't do a lot of it like they do today. I mean, there was some, but...
Yeah,
you know,
well, I mean, like, computer technology wasn't even really invented yet, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they were running like DNA or close to DNA testing, but it was still based on like fingerprints and who was walking in and out of the apartment at the time and stuff like that. So I thought kind of that old school cop stuff was pretty cool. And there weren't a lot of car chases. I think there should have been a lot more car chases. It was mostly just Tibbs walking around and coolly asking questions.
Yeah, there really wasn't a bunch of action at all in the movie. I mean, there's probably like three action scenes or something.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of it was more kind of just information build up until you kind of try to guess who it was.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, because of that, I found it kind of boring and I don't think I would call myself a fan of this movie. I don't think I would really recommend it to people. I mean, I think it has like a certain novelty of, like you said, the detective work, and just on a level of like, wow, this is how policemen actually had to go about doing business back then is kind of interesting. But that's more of like an idea separated from the movie itself than, you know, a point about the film. And Sidney Poitier is good, but the whole thing just kind of seemed like really dry and really procedural and just kind of going through the motions, and there wasn't a ton to it. It was just kind of, you know, they have like basically this prostitute is murdered in the very beginning of the movie, and then you've got this crazy street preacher and a couple other people like in
Ed Asner
being questioned for who did it, you know. And so the movie bounces around a little bit between, oh, maybe this person did it, maybe this person did it, let's try to find out, whatever. And you know, Sidney Poitier is friends with the preacher, so he's got this kind of personal touch to it where he doesn't necessarily want to turn in his friend who's been, you know, he's been friends with this guy for like 15 years. So, you know, there's some stuff to this movie, but it's all very like surface level and there's not really a bunch to dig into. So, Tyler, I know you're a huge fan of, like, you know, you've said before on this podcast, like, give you a smoky night, you know, smoky city at night, some like great 80s, yeah, like saxophone music and a cop drama, and you're, you know, as happy as you can be. And I don't know, for me, it's like, I think the cop movies of the 80s were a little bit more, I mean, I don't want to give a blanket statement and say they were more interesting, but visually, I think they're more interesting because in the 80s, everybody was, I was just getting ready to give another blanket generalization. There were a lot more, like action elements to cop movies back in the 80s than there were in the 70s. So I think just like as an audience member today, you know, circa 2012, watching something that came out in 1970 where not really a ton happens and they're just kind of walking around and asking questions, it gets kind of boring at times.
Dude, you got to watch Clint Eastwood in The Enforcer or Magnum Force.
Yeah, I've seen both.
Those are my favorite Dirty Harry movies because those have car chase scenes, lots of people dying, shoot first, ask questions later kind of thing. Yeah, and I agree, you know, Tibbs isn't the man, kind of guy who shoots first. He's not, you know, off the rails or anything like that. He just kind of like goes around and asks people questions. And I mean, he wants to get answers, but he doesn't really like force it out. Like he does it all by the book for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And generally movies are better when you have a cop that doesn't go by the book and you have a chief that's like, God, mayor's up my ass again because all the damage you caused down on 34th Street.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I mean, he chases people down, but even like when Ed Asner escapes, he's like, yeah, don't engage him yet, wait till he tries to leave town.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, okay. So they're just kind of following him at like a cool 45 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And then he eventually tries to leave the city and he crashes his own car. Like it's not even like it's a cool chase scene where they're like hitting each other and then eventually he's kind of like forced off the road. He like freaks out.
Yeah.
Tries to make a U-ey and just crashes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that kind of stuff. He chases another guy. He chases the apartment owner, mm-hmm. like the landlord at one point. And, that was kind of the only part of action. He karate chopped somebody, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I hadn't realized that there was little to no action in this movie.
Yeah.
But again, like, you know, I was still fairly interested in what was going on. I was still, you know, I dug the groove music and kind of the ambiance of the whole film. So I was kind of involved. That's why I was kind of surprised when I saw him karate chop someone. I was like, wow, there hasn't really been a lot of action, which I guess is a good thing because I didn't care that there wasn't a lot of action. Like mm-hmm. the movie was that entertaining or that enthralling for me that I didn't have to worry. You know, I didn't need to be like, where's someone going to blow something up?
Okay.
There are some movies like that, but yeah, another problem I kind of had with it was the family part. Like he comes home, I assume he comes home every day. They act like he's never there, like for weeks on end, and he'll show up randomly. And this kid, this dick of a kid he has, is like posing all these problems for the family.
I knew he would hate that kid because I hated him so much.
Yeah, and he wouldn't whoop up on him. Like if I acted like that when I was a kid, 30 years after this movie was made. Wait, 20 years after this movie was made. I forgot how old I was for a second. Like, if you acted like a dick like that in front of anybody, whether you be at home or in public, you got your ass handed to you.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't get to smoke and drink either afterwards. Like, you would get your ass whooped, and then you'd stay in your room for days. Like, if you were grounded, like, I'd be in my room for days.
because I did something seriously wrong. I wasn't like,
yeah,
whatever. But yeah, this kid, I would have knocked his block off basically.
Yeah.
And I would have, yeah.
You know,
tossed him out a window or something.
At the beginning of the movie, he's like, it's a Sunday and Sidney Poitier is working on a Sunday. And the wife, you know, he calls his wife and she's like, it is a Sunday. You do have a family, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he comes back home and the kid's just like chilling out, watching TV, watching like, you know, whatever, some sort of the concert performance or something. And the dad, you know, Poitier walks over and he's like, hey, what have you been doing all day? And he's like, nothing, just kind of hanging out, watching TV. And he's like, man, you never do anything, like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there, and he's like, you've been in your PJs just sitting around doing nothing, like watching TV all day. And in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, dude, it's a Sunday. He's a kid. He's like 8 years old. Leave him alone. That's what you're supposed to do on the weekends, just like hang out and do nothing. And then really quickly after that, you realize, okay, yeah, this kid is just a total dick because he's causing all these problems and he's like constantly hitting his sister and he like refuses to pick up Legos that he smashed all over the floor and stuff. And like, you know, the mom is like all over him all the time, which is fine. You know, she's deservedly so. And then,
yeah.
And then Sidney Poitier comes home and she's like, you're never home. Like she just goes off on him. She's like, you're never around. Like blah, blah, blah. You know, make your son pick up these Legos or whatever. And he goes down there and he's like, yeah, so why don't you, he's like, he tries to be cool about it. You know, he tries to be like a cool dad. He's like, hey bro, why don't you help me out here? Like, I gotta keep the peace in this family. Bro. So why don't you just pick this crap up? And the kid's like, all right. And he's like, are you going to do it like anytime soon? What's your personal timetable looking like here, Junior? And he's like, oh, you know, I'll get to it. And he's like,
I think he dismissively wanked at one point.
What?
I was like, what? I was just kidding, but I was like, I think the kid actually dismissively wanked at one point while his dad was talking. Yeah. Whatever, Dad. Why don't you beat it?
I mean, he might as well have. It's like,
yeah.
You know, I'm sitting there looking back at this thinking like, dude, how nice is your dad going to be to you in a situation where you're being a total ass and you're still going to treat him this way? And then he's like, Sidney Poitier is like, listen, I'm going to beat you if you don't do this.
Yeah.
And he does. And the kid just like stands there as if he's like freaking Kunta Kinte or something in Roots. And he's like taking a moral stand against.
Also, you know, predating Roots, I'm pretty sure.
I think so. Yeah, but he's, you know what I mean? Like taking a stand against like oppression and tyranny as if, you know, he's like, he's really becoming like a social martyr or something.
Yeah.
For standing there just taking this beating that his dad gives him. And then like Sidney Poitier breaks down and he's like, oh, you're just a kid. It's okay. And I'm like, no, you tell your kid to do something. He should do it. Like, it's as simple as that. That's
the kid standing up for malaise and not doing anything and like smoking in the greenhouse.
Yeah.
It's like, you have no values to stand up for, you dick.
Yeah.
Pick up your Legos.
So that was,
or I will pick them up for you, which means shoving them down his throat. I don't know. I'm a very violent parent.
Yeah, sure. That was the thing that pissed me off more than anything in the movie. So
yeah, too bad you couldn't have gotten hit by the truck instead.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
Jimmy,
you talked about the car chase, and that I think was a really great example of just a terrible action scene because there's no sense of space. There's no care for continuity. They would do these POV shots. Okay, first of all, it's underscored by Quincy Jones's score, which is really great. And as you mentioned, kind of driven by funk and all that kind of cool, like blaring brass instruments, kind of like something out of the Blues Brothers, basically. And that's really awesome. And in theory, car chases set to that should be pretty good. That's kind of all you need. But that's not the case here because they do this thing where they'll have the camera be in the back seat of the car and Ed Asner's driving away and he like, you know, rushedly looks over his shoulder and he's kind of like freaking out and spazzing and everything. And from the POV shot in the back seat of the car, it'll show that the driver's actually in the left lane. And then they'll immediately cut to a wide shot of the car from the opposite direction. And he's in the right lane, and there's not the same cars around. It's just, like, terrible editing all over the place. There's no sense of space. There's no yeah, just respect for creating a scene that actually makes any sense physically. So, and that scene also went on forever. I don't know if you noticed that, but it was like, and he would like look behind him and then swerve through three or four cars. They would cut to a wide shot and then just repeat four or five or six times over and over again. And it wasn't like the cops behind him were doing anything interesting to catch up. It was all just about Ed Asner and him like maneuvering through some vehicles. And then, yeah, like you said, he just ends up smashing his own car off the road. And then I don't know if you noticed this, but during that they would do a lot of snap zooms, like these really quick zoom in shots. And then for that scene where he crashes the car, because presumably they didn't have the budget to physically crash the vehicle, they just took the frame itself and spun it around as if he had gone upside down or something. They didn't even take the camera during the filming process and spin the camera upside down, which would make a lot more sense. They physically took the frame, almost like when you and I make movies and stuff, these little animated shorts where we take these, you know, like single 2D pictures and can kind of control them and spin them around on the X and Y axis or whatever. That's what they did with the frame itself in the movie and just spun it around to kind of trick the audience into thinking that the car had actually spun. I was like, wow, that is just really cheap. This just doesn't look good. So yeah. I think the movie's kind of hurt by the time in which it was made and the fact that technology just wasn't to a point where they were able to make convincing action sequences, I think.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, yeah.
That looked pretty cheap.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the whole thing just kind of, it felt more like a TV show than a movie to me, because of how procedural it was and how much like, okay, we're just going through the motions and just hashing through these different options and nothing was really ever surprising. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's good if you like really, really procedural stuff, but for me, it's like, there's so many better cop movies that you could spend your time on.
Did you know who did it right away, or did you just find out when everyone else found out?
No, I didn't really know who did it. I thought that, you know, because they pinpoint Martin Landau in the very beginning as like, oh, he's the guy who did it. And I was like, okay, right. It would be way too obvious if he was the one who actually did it, because that's what the thrust of the movie is. Like, okay, everybody's saying he did it. And I was thinking right. like, okay, there's got to be some other person. And then that's what the movie does, like halfway through, it kind of takes this fork in the road, like, oh, maybe it's this other person, and then it's actually not, and it's really Martin Landau the whole time. So then you're just like, oh, all right, well, that's not very creative. So I don't know.
Ben, how do you feel about religious figures driving political movements?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of – I don't know when the separation of church and state came into effect. Maybe you do, Tyler, but
it's not really a policy. It's more of a point of view.
Unspoken thing.
Well, there's no real separation of church and state. There's just the belief that there should be a separation of church and state, and then others feel that there shouldn't be.
No, oh, okay.
It was an idea that was kind of popularized right around Jefferson's time. I think someone suggested – you know, when they were forming a government, they were like, all right, well, we're coming out from under a government who charges us taxes to support a church that we may not agree with. Mm-hmm. So in the United States, or what will be the United States, we'll have a government that doesn't have a particular religion, doesn't establish or endorse a specific church or anything.
Yeah, so this is like
going to be fairly secular.
1770s, 1780s. This is a good 200 years before this movie came out. So yeah, I think the separation of church and state concept was around before this movie. But
right. But I mean, the other thing is that it wasn't really something that said, okay, yeah, whenever you deal with politics, you should never deal with religion, because obviously there are going to be people. Individuals who, because they can do whatever they want and say whatever they want, are going to link government with religion.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not really a law or anything. There isn't legislation that says that the two have to be separated. Mm-hmm. Although in the Constitution, it says that the government cannot endorse or give money to or any type of that to a specific church or religion. That's why we don't have school or prayer in schools.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like people can vote for presidents and vote for senators and whatever and vote for legislation based on their religious views. Like, there's nothing keeping them from doing that.
Right.
So I just don't, you know, my question was, you know, like, as a religious figure, should you take the prominence and the sway that you have as a religious figure and apply that to politics? Like, that's kind of what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like,
he was really pushing it that because he was using his sermon to get people to go out and vote in a specific way.
Yeah. I mean, in the course, like, in the confines of this movie, it seemed that Martin Landau was pushing his agenda maybe a little too much. I mean, he is this kind of mega preacher, and there are people, you know, crowded outside of the church. Like, the church is full, standing room only. There's hundreds of people standing around outside just to hear what he has
to say. Tens of thousands. It was like Occupy Sharp's church.
So he does have a lot of influence, and it did seem like, I don't know, like, on a conceptual level, I don't really know where I stand on that, because it seems like, you know, okay, if you have that kind of audience, maybe you should be able to use that platform to kind of push forth a message, as long as you're not like, I don't know, it's tough, man. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's weird because, like, the proposition itself, they didn't go too far into it, but I think maybe what was going on back then, there were probably a lot of cities who, like these downridden cities that were just slums and bad construction of buildings and things like that, and there wasn't a lot of regulation, and the proposition itself was kind of for regulation to make sure that, you know, to help bring crime down, to help bring, like, these bad buildings, like, codes, bring up the codes and stuff like this.
Yeah, and, so, like, I mean, the journalist comes in and asks him, you know, like, oh, you're trying to get power to control something. What was it? Do you remember that scene? And he's like, no, we don't want the power. We just want what we're promised. Like, we want what we've been promised that we're supposed to be having.
Yeah, the journalist was like, you want the power to control the codes. And he's we just want people to enforce the codes.
Yeah,
we have building codes and things like this already. We just need somebody to come in and enforce those codes so we don't live in squalor. And the journalist even says, he goes, you know, I'm not supposed to say this, but good luck because I want that too. But that proposition in the movie is probably a good thing, but there are other, you know, governmental propositions that people will latch on to, whether they be good or bad. You know, they'll sometimes latch on to them, and I don't know. It just seems like a lot of times there's a strong voice, like the preacher in the movie, and a lot of people are just like, oh, yeah, that sounds good, whatever.
Yeah. It could very easily be misuse of power.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sure. So you just have to be careful, like, walking that line. I mean, I think it's okay for people to have agendas and things, but when, especially for religious things, like, when your agenda overpowers any other message you're trying to send, then that's probably where I would draw the line with, like, that being a problem, you know, like, on a personal level outside of the realm of this movie. If there were a mega preacher or something like this in real life who is trying to get people to vote on something, but, like, every second or third sermon is just, like, ramming home the point of, hey, everybody who's listening to me right now, vote for this or do this or something, and not really concentrating on why people were there in the first place, I think that's probably where it becomes an issue. But
plus, that guy was banging the prostitute.
Yes, he was.
Not a good move.
There was semen everywhere.
Chief, there's semen over here in the refrigerator. Hey, you guys.
Scrape it. Bag it. Give it to evidence.
Hey, you guys. I'm looking at this light fixture on the ceiling. Plenty of semen up in here. Bag it.
Oh, man.
Item 900. Your Honor, I'd like to submit item 900. Is this more semen samples? Yes, Your Honor. Oh, man. I would love a mock deleted scene of all these semen samples just being presented.
Let's see. What else did I have? Oh, there's this one thing that I wrote down. Did you guys, I'm asking.
Hey, just me.
As if there's a guest. We were supposed to have a guest today, and she bailed at the last second. It's all right. I'm not going to name names. It's cool.
It's okay.
We'll get her sometimes.
Well, it's all right if you bail. I bail sometimes.
Yeah, it's fine.
Those episodes never make it.
So did you notice this thing where they did these weird POV shots where people would look directly into the camera? like fairly often in conversation, they would do, like, Martin Landau would be staring right down the barrel of the lens, and then they would cut to Sidney Poitier, and he would also be staring right into the camera. It was really unnerving. Did you notice that at all?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Wow, I can't believe I missed something like that.
They did it like 5 to 7 times, I think, over the course of the movie. And generally, when people do conversation scenes like that, it's, you know, over the shoulder, the whole 180-degree rule.
Right.
And you guys can look that stuff up on Wikipedia if you don't know what I'm talking about. But basically, like, in today's modern film language, if you're going to do close-ups like that, generally their eye line is just off-center of the camera, you know, just to one side of the camera. It's very rarely looking directly at the lens, and then you reverse the shot and the other person is looking directly at the lens. It's really weird. And I was just wondering if maybe, like, because this movie came out in 1970, the language of film as we know it today hadn't been, like, fully established at that point.
Maybe they were trying something new. They were like, oh man, it'll be like the audience is Tibbs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of the effect that you get. But then it's weird, like, if they did it from one perspective, one side of that conversation the whole time, then I think you would really get that feeling, like, okay, you are this person, and really kind of associate with one character over another. But they choose to go back and forth so much that it doesn't really have that feeling. You know, like, psychologically, subconsciously, you're not really associating with anybody because it switches back and forth so often. So I don't know. I just thought it was something to point out.
I have a big glaring question, Ben.
Okay, let's hear it.
Does anyone actually call him Mr. Tibbs at any point in the movie?
So I was going to address this and I forgot, so thank you for bringing it up. They don't ever – nobody calls him Mr. Tibbs over the course of the entire film, as far as I know. I mean, I was waiting for it. You didn't hear anybody call him that, right?
Not that I know of. I was waiting for it, too. I was waiting for the line itself.
Well, that's
someone
the
was
thing.
Calling him Tibbs, and then he was like, they call me Mr. Tibbs.
That's the thing.
Never happened either.
The line, they call me Mr. Tibbs, and this title of this movie is actually in quotations with an exclamation point at the end of it. So it's a quote, basically, and the quote comes from the movie that actually preceded this one,
that's what I thought.
Which is called
In the Heat of the Night.
In the Heat of the Night, yes. So yeah. In that movie, he actually says, they call me Mr. Tibbs.
Okay.
But he doesn't ever say that in this one, and nobody refers to him as Mr. Tibbs in this
one. So it's a catchphrase in the prequel.
Yes.
No, it's a catchphrase in the movie before this. But so they're like, oh, let's just name it after the catchphrase, but then never say the catchphrase. That works.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. As long as there's a source for where that came from.
There is a source. Yeah. And
I figured it was from In the Heat of the Night.
And then I was wondering if they would do something where they took a quote from this one and call the third movie that quote, but they actually just called the third movie The Organization, which doesn't sound nearly as cool.
It's not, hey, there's semen over here.
That's what it should have been called.
Check the light socket. Is that what you said?
Check the light socket, : yep, semen.
Hey, there's something behind this milk carton. Yep, semen. Well, that's odd. Is Tibbs in the organization?
He is, yeah.
Nice. All right, well, I got to check out this trilogy then.
Yeah, and I've heard In the Heat of the Night is really good. I love that we watched the second movie in this trilogy without having seen...
I love that scenario.
The first or the third.
Let's watch Friday the 13th, 7. I haven't seen 2 through 6.
For me, Tyler, the way that I even knew what this was, like, my only association with this entire franchise was a quote from the Disney movie The Lion King, in which Pumbaa, I believe... it says, are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? They call me Mr. Pig instead of Mr. Tibbs. And that's supposedly a reference to In the Heat of the Night. So,
okay.
Cool. Yeah.
I know there was a TV show, something along the lines of Heat of the Night, but I guess it's...
Really? I wonder if... I don't think it was in...
I think it might be called something else,
actually.
It was
related.
Forget that. Forget I said anything.
All right. Maybe you're thinking of Moonlighting with Bruce Willis.
You know what? that's it. No, I'm just kidding.
You
know, Bruce Willis is G.I. Joe. I didn't know there was a G.I. Like, that freaking trailer, man, I'm telling you.
What did you think about that trailer for G.I. Joe Retaliation?
I mean, we podcasted on the first G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra, and I am ready for Cobra Commander to not be Joseph Gordon-Levitt anymore, but to actually take on his high-pitched Cobra self from the cartoon, because, you know, I'll live and die by the Cobra Clutch. And, I mean, adding The Rock to it is just A-okay. But then I saw this trailer, and Bruce Willis was in it, and I was like, wait a second, what's he doing here? And this isn't a spoiler, it was in the trailer. It's like, call me Joe. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wait a second. And I've never heard of the individual Joe in G.I. Joe.
Oh, man, that's what, like, the original dolls were based on. Like, G.I. Joe was, like, a guy that was, like, the action figures and the dolls and stuff back in, like, the 50s and 60s or whatever.
Is that what they're referring to?
Yeah. That's what the entire G.I. Joe...
Well, I know that. Like, I know it started as a toy, but I thought they were talking about, like, the organization was called G.I. Joe. That's what I always thought with, like, the modern... After the cartoon series, it was kind of like an organization of... Like, you were a Joe. Like, you were part of the organization.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember. Maybe people can go back and listen to our podcast about G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. I'm not sure exactly how they referred to it in that movie. I don't remember if they referred to people as Joes. But, yeah, that's interesting.
G.I. Joe...
Yo, Joe. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll get Alison Loring back on to do another podcast about that, like, once it comes out on DVD, and, you know, we'll wait a couple years or something and do it. So
nice.
Interesting. Cool. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much it for They Call Me Mr. Tibbs. So why don't you rev up the old Apple II and tell people what we're going to be watching next week?
Sure, no problem. Let me pull that lever. All right, well, Apple II, printing out that little ticker tape.
Yep.
Let's not make a parade, but let's actually watch Beetlejuice, starring the guy that played Batman,
Michael Keaton.
I think that girl from Mr. Deeds is in it.
Okay. Winona Ryder.
And I'm pretty sure Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock fame is also in this.
Alec Baldwin, yeah.
Yeah, hey, you passed my quiz. Good God, Lemon. But yeah, Beetlejuice for next week. Is it an instant watch, Benji?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I'll check that, but...
And to follow up on what I was talking about earlier about In the Heat of the Night, the TV show?
Yes, yeah.
There actually was a TV show called In the Heat of the Night, and it starred Carol O'Connor from All in the Family, you know, the big fat guy. Archie Bunker.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the white police chief. And Virgil Tibbs, the character, returns. And I think they're in Philadelphia for some reason, even though They Call Me Mr. Tibbs is in San Francisco.
Yeah, and I think In the Heat of the Night was set in Philadelphia. And then they just changed the location for the second movie inexplicably. But
yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, they are related as far as characters, but Sidney Poitier doesn't
reprise his role.
Maybe he makes some appearances, but Quincy Jones does the theme song for it.
Okay,
so
there we go. Cool. So yeah, we are going to be watching Beetlejuice, and I just checked, and it is available on Netflix. Watch instantly. So feel free to watch along with us. Shoot us an email, notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of it. Let us know if you watched They Call Me Mr. Tibbs. What you thought about that one or any of our previous episodes. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-NJMM, which is 6566. And subscribe for free to this podcast. Actually, in iTunes, I'm not sure if you can do that right now. We're going through this weird thing where I wrote up a big post on it on notjustnewmovies.com and on our Facebook page and everything. So we're having some issues with iTunes because Mevio, which is the hosting service we've been using since the inception of this podcast, has decided that we are in copyright violation, even though we're clearly not. We're, you know, all the stuff that we use comes under the fair use policies, but anyway... they've decided to just, like, stop hosting our content of all the previous episodes, so I'm not really sure how this is going to work right now. We're kind of in this weird middle zone right this second, but Geek Tyrant has stepped in and allowed us to host all of our stuff there. So as of right now, you guys can go and check out. We have a new RSS feed. If you want to download the episodes of the podcast, you can download them, you know, direct download them straight from there if you want to do that. And I'm not really sure how the whole iTunes thing is going to work. We are going to be streaming it from notjustnewmovies.com and from geektyrant.com, so you can listen to episodes there. It's probably how you're listening to this one right now. But the whole iTunes thing is kind of up in the air right this second. So we'll try to get that taken care of as quickly as possible, and we'll let you guys know, you know, what needs to happen to kind of get that whole thing straightened out. So
you can find the direct download spots on the tabs at the top of the site, right?
Yes, yeah, and all that stuff is still, as of right now, still works. Mevio might just straight up delete everything we've ever done, in which case we'll have to go back and re-upload all of our old episodes to Geek Tyrant and then update all of those direct download things. But yeah, we'll let you guys know what happens with all that stuff. So you can find us on Facebook and a Twitter, twitter.com/NJNM podcast. We don't have any new followers this week other than spam bots, and we don't have any emails or voicemails or anything. So let's just go ahead and jump right into the character name game and finish that up. So the name was Elliot Wilhelm. Tyler, do you have any idea what movie that character is from? Keeping in mind that there has to be a connection to a movie that just came out in wide release this past weekend.
All right, I think the movie that you're referencing that came out this week probably isn't Star Wars.
No.
You wouldn't do that.
No.
It would be that other movie that stars that person.
You mentioned him in this podcast.
You mentioned him in that podcast. Freaking A. Is it Carol O'Connor? Archie Bunker? He's dead.
No.
Sidney Poitier, not dead, I don't think.
No, the person that you mentioned. You
mentioned Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons?
No, it's Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, The Rock. Okay. Yes. So he was in Journey 2, or yep. Jabroni 2, as I like to call it. Journey to the Mysterious Island.
Okay.
And he also played Elliot Wilhelm in the movie...
Yes, wait, he did.
Wait,
what movie
The Rock?
Was it?
Was he in? Was that the character he played in Fast Five?
Nope.
Was that the character he played in? Man, what else was he in? Walking Tall.
No, but it's kind of in that realm, you know, like around those years, not any of the recent stuff.
Okay, so Walking Tall, 2000. Was that 2006?
Something like that. Yeah, like mid 2000s.
That wasn't his. That wasn't his Scorpion King name, was it?
No.
They call me Elliot Wilhelm.
It was post Scorpion King.
Post Scorpion King. Wait. Okay, so he did Mummy 3 and then Scorpion King. Oh, man, I have no idea.
Vince Vaughn is also in this movie.
That doesn't help.
John Travolta is in this movie. Uma Thurman, Steven Tyler makes a cameo.
How?
That's
the one. That movie called. It's a sequel to that. One of those dumb movies.
Yep, it is a sequel. It's a sequel to Get Shorty.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it. Get Tally.
I wish it was called that. It's actually called Be Cool.
Be Cool, that's right.
Yes.
I knew what you were talking about once you named all those people.
Yeah.
Just, I've seen that, so I couldn't remember the name of it.
Indeed.
Nice.
Good old...
The Rock Johnson.
Yep.
Wayne, wrestling John Cena at WrestleMania 28 in Miami, Florida.
When is that?
Ben, you coming down for this, son?
I don't think so. When is
tickets
that?
Tickets are only $500.
Are you serious?
If you get $1,500 package, you get to go to Miami... You get to, you know, walk around and have people sign stuff. I don't know. I think there's some type of package you can get, but I'm just going to watch it on TV. Maybe.
When is that supposed to be? Do you know?
April something, like okay. First week of April. April 2nd, maybe.
All right.
I think me, Panther, and Big Red are going to convene somewhere and watch it.
Nice.
And recount the days of Destageddon in its glory days.
Destageddon.blogspot.com.
Back when Ben P was actively wrestling against us. Now he's He's resorted back to blogging only.
The fictional wrestling blog. You guys
is it
created.
Fictional, Ben? Was it fictional, or do you just not remember?
I'm pretty sure it was fictional.
It's like Neverland. Like, you remember some things, but you don't remember everything.
Yeah, so the place between really sleep and awake. That's where Destigeddon is.
That's where Destigeddon lies, and you can't really tell if it ever happened or not.
All right. Well, let's go back and forth and tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet, speaking of Destigeddon.
Destigeddon is no longer new. It's only collecting dust in cyberspace. But yeah, you can definitely go back and read it. Other than that, I guess when the next Star Wars movie comes out, I'll release that Star Wars review re-release that Star Wars review.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be in a year or so, so I wouldn't look forward to that right now. And then I'm on this podcast, so. Yeah, just keep coming back to the podcast, notjustamovies.com. Put it in your, like, your homepage.
Yep.
And, yeah, forget, like, what are those other sites you write for, Ben?
I'll talk about them in a minute.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead?
And people, you can track Tyler down via our Twitter feed as well.
Oh, yeah. No one talks to me. It doesn't matter. So.
We'll be making...
Thanks for the shout-out anyway, dude.
Making movie pun... title related jokes.
Yeah, we got a couple good ones.
So you guys can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/benpears, benpears. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com and also doing the Geek Tyrant Daily Roundup over there. You can find me writing a lot more at filmonic.com, doing a bunch of movie news and stuff there. And all of my reviews can be found at notjustnewmovies.com. You can also hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. Music for this episode comes courtesy of Quincy Jones' score for They Call Me Mr. Tibbs.
Mr. Tibbs!
And we will, as Tyler mentioned, be watching Beetlejuice for next week. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Tyler, as always, for participating.
Hey, no problem, man.
And we will see you guys next week.
This is my job, dude.